Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us again today. And our special guest here today is a return guest, Walter Crittenden, the author of Lost Star of Myth and Time, and also the producer of the award-winning documentary, The Great Year. A little bit more about Walter in just a moment. I urge you to go to the website, that's journeyswithrebecca.com, and there you will find all kinds of information. A couple things that I wanted to point out to you is Journeys News and Our World News. Announcement is Jerry Smith. He will be the featured speaker at this year's Conspiracy Con 7. It will be held at the Crown Plaza Hotel in downtown San Jose, California on May 26th and 27th. The topic is weather warfare. Find out more about that on my website. And also, our guest today, Walter Crittenden, is also going to be a speaker at CPAC. And you can get that information at CPAC online. And that's going to be in San Diego, October 5th through the 7th of this year. At USD. So again, you can get that information right there off of the website. If you've missed a guest, don't forget that the archives are free and we have podcasting. Lots of information there at the website journeyswithrebecca.com. Okay, back to my guest today. I'm very excited to have Walter back with us today. We're going to be following up on many different things today. One of the things that we are going to be following up on is the Binary Institute, which also is binaryinstitute.org, binaryresearchinstitute.org. I'll get that out in just a second. He's going to be talking a lot today about Conference on the Precession and Ancient Knowledge. We're really going to be covering a lot of information today here with Walter. He is a fabulous guest. We're going to be talking about John Deering, Graham Hancock, Jeff Marcy. We're going to be talking about the Mayan calendar, all kinds of fun stuff. So you guys are going to want to stay with us because we have Walter Crittenden, author of Lost Star of Myth and Time, and also one of the guest speakers at CPAC this year. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine, providing true accounts of the strange and unknown for over 58 years. To receive your free copy of Fate Magazine, call 800-728-2730 or log on to fatemag.com.
Call Rebecca and schedule your private reading. 888-95-TAROT. That's 888-958-2768. Where will your life journey take you?
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome. And as promised, I have a very special guest with me here today, Walter Crittenden. And he is the author of Lost Star of Myth and Time. And also, he has a DVD that we talked about last year when Walter was on called The Great Year. Absolutely fabulous, narrated by James Earl Jones. Let's welcome Walter to the show, Journeys with Rebecca. Hi, how are you?
Hey, terrific, Rebecca.
This is so much fun. I'm so excited.
Oh, it's my joy.
It's a pleasure
to be here.
There is so much going on in your world and so much information that you're here to share with us today. It's absolutely fabulous. You know, we'll talk a little bit, I guess, about the Lost Star of Myth and Time. You know, I have some things that you have sent to me. You were kind enough, or your assistant was kind enough to send to me. So I'm going to kind of let you go over kind of what all of this is going to be about today, and we're just going to go from there.
Well, there is a lot of new stuff happening, both on the archaeological side and on the astronomical side. But just a real quick overview for anybody that's new to the concept. Ancient folklore from around the world talks about the idea that history moves in a cycle with a golden age at one end and a dark age at the other. And Plato called this the Great Year. And of course, we were all taught in school that, gee, this is nothing but a fairy tale, a myth. And so we've thought that for the last few hundred years, even though all these ancient cultures believed in it, over 30 of them, according to Giorgio Santayana, the former professor of history at MIT. And recently, there's some evidence that indicates the cycle might be real. And it kind of goes like this, Rebecca. Just as the Earth spins on the axis and gives us a cycle of day and night, or the Earth goes around the Sun and gives us the cycle of the seasons, so too does it now look like the whole solar system is curving through space, producing the observable change in the sky known as the precession of the equinox. And if that is confirmed, which we hope to hear pretty soon from the Stanford GPB program, then it means that there's a basis for this tremendously long cycle that the ancients spoke about, this great year, which is roughly 24,000 years. And if that's proven out, then it has all sorts of implications. One of the big ones, of course, is that if history moves in a cycle, with these high ages of enlightenment or golden ages, then instead of just kind of ignoring or denigrating what our ancient ancestors taught, which we tend to do now because we have this very Darwinian belief that anything that came before us must be more primitive, I think it'll sort of switch things around to where we now start looking for and wisdom in the very ancient cultures and trying to figure out what they might have known that we still don't know today and how to use it to make a better world.
Well, and there's, there's a lot of people out there, Walter, that have certainly put out the theories and the ideas and, to some degree facts that obviously some of the more ancient cultures were probably much more advanced than even we are. It just hasn't got into the mainstream yet.
Well, that's true, but it is coming. I was just watching a television program last night on the History Channel. There's this fellow named Josh, and he kind of tromps around the world and goes to different ancient sites. And last night they were at Tiwanaku, which is this site up by Lake Titicaca in South America. It's at 13,000 foot elevation, and there's evidence of a huge culture there. Matter of fact, they call it the Stonehenge of the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, today, hardly anybody lives there because at 13,000 feet, we just don't know how to farm up there and make a living from the soil. And yet the evidence, based on all the pottery shards and temple structures, that sort of thing, indicates that there was a population of 50 to 100,000 people living up there.
Wow.
3,000 years ago. And one thing that they just discovered that I just learned last night was the pattern of the farming, the agricultural areas, they did it in such a way where it was surrounded by water. The water would heat up during the day and essentially keep the crops warm at night. So they had mastered a form of agriculture that we have completely forgotten. And now some of the natives down there are starting to re-implement it to be able to grow crops at higher altitudes.
Wow, that's fascinating.
I know, and there's all sorts of stuff like this. Another big one recently was they had a conference on this device called the Antikythera device. And you might have heard about this. This is a device that was found off the Isle of Antikythera in the Aegean Sea, east of Greece, by sponge divers roughly in the early part of the 20th century. And they found all this stuff that dates to a shipwreck that's at least 2,000 years ago. They dated around 80 BC or so. And they know that from the coins and the amphora. And it was all corroded around something they thought was an anchor. Well, they took this big green clump of corroded material to the Athens Museum, and it sat there for almost 50 years until a janitor bumped it and it broke open. And they found inside 32 different gears. And what is so startling about that is this thing dates to the BC era, and we're all taught in school that geared devices weren't developed until 1400, the great clockmaking era.
Right.
And so it shows you once again there's some ancient knowledge there that we've completely forgotten. And
if they discovered what this mechanism might be for?
Yes, it has some Greek writing on it that refers to the heavens, and they've noticed that the gear ratios are exactly what's needed to plot the motions of the moon, the Earth, Mars, and the major planets. So it looks like some sort of a computer for determining orbits of the moon and the nearby planets.
Interesting.
Yes, I mean,
interesting.
And this is real hard science. People studying it. Anybody can go Google it. Just Antikythera device.
Wow. That's really fascinating. I hadn't heard about the, you know, what they actually ended up finding it to be. I mean, I heard about it, but I didn't know what the end result was.
Oh, and they keep discovering more things about it, too. One of the more recent things was it looks like a lot of the smaller gears ride on a bigger gear that sort of is like a turntable. And so that is essentially like a differential gear. Those weren't developed recently until the Industrial Revolution around 1800 or so.
Right.
So this thing is looking very sophisticated, and it's something that, you know, ancients are not supposed to have.
Well, that just goes to show you that there is a lot of ancient knowledge out there that proves that, you know, we don't have all the answers, that there was other civilizations, there was other indications that there was very intelligent beings, I don't know if you want to call them humans, whatever, that was here, that preceded our modern history.
Yes, I think they were humans, and I know there's a lot of far-out theories about people trying to figure out, you know, why some of these advanced things show up in primitive times. And, of course, if you believe the linear idea of history, you kind of need some reason that, oh, you know, they were brought by aliens or something like
that. Yeah, right.
But if you believe in the cyclical theory, which all the ancient cultures themselves taught, this idea of a great year, then it's just natural that we had these things and then slowly lost them as we went into the Dark Age, which, you know, happened all around the world. And now we're slowly regaining them as we, you know, move through the Renaissance into more modern times. We're finding out a lot of these things existed long, long ago.
Well, and I think that's what's the most important thing here as far as your book, because you do talk about some of these ancient discoveries, and you talk about, you know, this, and I truly believe in the cyclical nature of everything, because even in our own present day lifetime, everything is cyclical. Everything that we do.
Truly, and those cycles that we often find are driven by celestial motions. You know, the biggest cycle of day that we talked about, that's driven by the Earth spinning. And the next big cycle, the seasonal one, that's by the orbit. And think of how many things that changes. It causes things to spawn, hibernate, migrate, plants to spring out of the ground this time of year in the Northern Hemisphere, and then, you know, fall back down and decay again. It literally affects all life. And so, too, if there is a bigger cycle, a bigger celestial movement, I don't think it's a hard leap to make to consider that it might also have a very subtle effect over a very long period of time.
Well, and I think that's a really good point there to make for people out there that are listening to us here today, is that they have to just, I call it rolling back time, where you can just roll back in your mind those different ideas. And somewhere along the way, there's got to be a connection there. People do feel that connection too. I mean, even as human beings, we are we're prone to those cycles. Because in the wintertime, you'll hear people, I put on, 10 pounds, but I lose it in the summer because I'm more active. So it affects us on all levels. I mean, every single level that we are existing on.
You're right. We tend to disassociate ourselves from nature so much just because we have all these modern conveniences. But the fact is that it has a very compelling influence in our lives. And this was something common to ancient cultures. They're finding many sites are astronomically aligned. They're oriented towards the equinox or the solstice. And it just shows that many of these ancient cultures were tuned into the movements of the heavens, unlike we are today.
Well, and I think that if you get tuned into it as much as you possibly can, it also makes the quality of life better, because you are going with the flow instead of trying to put a puzzle piece together that doesn't belong in that puzzle.
Yes, and even almost subconsciously being oriented in your space by the way the structure is set up in relation to the sun, for example, Chaco Canyon, some of the main meridians are exactly in alignment with the equinox. Like there's one wall that goes right down the middle, and it's exactly due east, due west. And so one could be working around there and just sort of glance at the shadows on that wall and sort of consciously or subconsciously know exactly what time it is or
yes.
What time of year it is, that sort of thing.
Yes. And speaking of time, I really wish they would leave the clocks alone. I'm sorry, I just had to make that little dig.
Well,
I don't do well with clocks. I do well with what my body tells me. So it's really hard for me to keep things on schedule because I don't work because a clock says that this is what time it is.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I would imagine, if we all did live in a little closer to it with nature, we'd have fewer problems in society today. But I think we're a long way from kind of getting back to that point.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with that. So what else is going on with some of the new discoveries, Walter? I know you've got a lot of stuff coming up this year, and we'll be talking about that later, but I know that you talked to me before we got started today that there was a lot of new stuff happening out there.
There is. One area where we're really focusing is this whole idea of precession. Many of these ancient myths, folklore, actually over 200 myths, incorporate this idea that civilization rises and falls, and it's related to precession. And this has kind of always been an enigma to modern scientists, because precession is sort of considered to be this really esoteric wobbling of the Earth, and that's why the equinox slowly changes. But there's some new evidence to indicate that precession, where if you look, due east on the date of the equinox, that day when night and day are of equal length, you'll notice that the stars in the background aren't quite in the same position that they were the year before relative to the sun.
True.
They slowly move, 4,000 years ago we were entering Aries, 2,000 years ago Pisces, and now we're entering Aquarius, the dawning of the age of Aquarius. This isn't just a new age concept. This is an actual movement of the equinox relative to the stars that astronomers watch and monitor, and they plot the rate that it changes, and it's thought to be due to a wobbling Earth. Well, the new evidence shows that you can produce the same observable, a changing equinox or pattern of stars in the background on the date of the equinox, simply by the solar system curving through space. And we've been trying to figure out different ways to prove this. While there's a lot of arguments for it and some math that's very compelling, we really need, some third-party data from NASA or really good scientists out there. And so what's gone on is that Stanford and NASA have teamed up and sent a spacecraft into space above the Earth, and it's called Gravity Probe B. And it's about an $800 million project, and what they're looking to do is to actually measure general relativity to see how much the mass of the Earth might bend time and space. And to do this, they've created the finest gyroscopes ever built. These things, there's four of them on the spacecraft, and if you just spun them, they would spin for 25,000 years without stopping.
Okay.
So they're just the finest precision instrument ever built, and they're attached to a telescope. And the telescope points to a guide star. And so it's supposed to be able to tell them whether or not the Earth is bending time and space, because it would slightly reorient this gyroscope. Well, we realize that that's also a perfect device to figure out if precession is caused by the Earth wobbling or the solar system moving. And the reason this is a great device for that is because if this thing sits 400 miles in space above the so-called wobbling Earth and it's in free fall, therefore it shouldn't show any precession. However, because it moves with the Earth, and obviously the Earth moves with the Sun through space, if we're correct about precession, it should pick up precession. And about 9 months ago, they started to make some announcements and say they were getting some unusual signals. And then they were supposed to release all their data here in April, and they've just announced that they've got some unknown signals they need to separate out first. And so I've been in touch with them, actually went up there to Stanford and had an interesting meeting. And while they can't tell me anything specifically, because they have to release it to all the public at the same time, they did ask all the right questions about whether or not there could be another star out there that's affecting our solar system. And so I guess the latest estimate is that they're supposed to release data in December of this year, and we're really looking forward to finding out if that confirms the new or very old theory of precession.
Wow, I didn't know all about that, and I actually have a scientist friend that's been on the show before that works for NASA, and we didn't talk about that last time we spoke, so that's some interesting news for me.
I'll have to get with him and
see what else I can dig up on that, because he would have access to it. That would be great.
Yeah,
awesome.
They've spent so much money on this thing, Rebecca.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Hey, you guys, stay with us, and we're going to be back with more of Walter Cruttenden in just a minute.
Be sure to check out Mark Kerr's debut CD, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com. This flawless debut performance earned Mark an induction into the Blues Hall of Fame as Ambassador to the Blues for the state of Louisiana. Also, it earned him a nomination for Musician of the Year in 2006 by the Academy of Texas Music. Mark Kerr, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com.
For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and by others just like you who have something dramatic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on all aspects of the paranormal, angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now. 800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate waits.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Well, thanks for staying with us. We're here today with Sesh Puri. We're talking about several things. We're talking about the handprint of Atlas. We're also talking about Wonder of the Worlds. We've talked a little bit about Tesla, of course, the Great Pyramids, the ley lines, that kind of thing. We've just been having a lot of fun with this, in my opinion, Sesh. But one of the things that really struck me when I was looking over your material was what I announced on the last segment, which was the artificial axis shift. I think that is something anybody who is interested in this particular mode of conversation that we're having or topic, I think is going to be very interested in that particular artificial axis shift information that you have for us today.
Yeah, and that's really amazing. And even though I discovered this, every time I think about it, I just kind of go, wow, because it's really mind-boggling. But what I discovered was that the Earth's axis of rotation is artificial. And this came about through studying the geomorphology and the geophysics, and it was very involved over a number of years. And I explain all this in detail in the book, but what it came down to eventually was realizing that the way the continents of the Earth are distributed show that there should be another axis, rotational axis to the Earth, and the North Pole should be up about around where Baffin Island is. And this is reflected also in the Brahman star charts of thousands of years ago. They show the stars in a different position than they are today. I remember reading many, many years ago Emanuel Velikovsky's World in Collision, and he discussed those star charts in that book, and that came back to me when I was doing the study of the geophysics of the Earth. And although I think Velikovsky was wrong about many things, he did make some accurate predictions, and I think he was correct about this shift in the axis of the Earth. And so I looked into this, and I realized that if the Earth's axis had shifted, there had to be a mechanical cause for that. And the only way you can get a spheroid to rotate on an axis is to strike its surface at a tangent. And a tangent is a right angle to a direct hit. Let's say if you were just going right directly to the surface at a 90 degree angle, a tangent would be 90 degrees to that, if you can see what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, if it's a globe of the Earth, for example, and you were just going to brush the side of it with your hand, you'd be striking it at a tangent. So I looked along the equator for some sign of a disturbance. I was specifically looking for something that would be like a crater or a crater lake. And what I came across, really, it stopped me, because when I got to Africa, I saw Lake Victoria, and it's positioned precisely on the equator. And I began studying Lake Victoria very carefully, and what I finally determined was that that is the site of where a large object hit the Earth thousands of years ago and literally wrenched the planet into a new axis of rotation. And there are ancient legends that describe this object approaching the Earth, and it's all over the world. It's in Polynesia, the American Indians, the Native Americans, in Europe it's described, in Greek mythology it's described, among the in India, in their ancient text it's described. And it's usually described as a three-headed serpent or object approaching in the sky. And that's what this object was, how it was composed. It had a main central body, and then it had three equal parts in front of it, like like a three-headed creature. And people could see this approaching in the sky, and when it hit the earth, it caused gigantic floods and earthquakes everywhere. So if you look at Lake Victoria, you will see that that is a tangential crater lake. It's caused by an object striking the earth at a very shallow angle and then immediately wrenching the planet. So you have this gigantic spiral shape. Now, geophysicists have studied this area in Africa, and they don't really understand the Great African Rift, how it was formed, and the structures in that area. But what that is, the reason they can't understand it, is that it's the result of a massive strike to the Earth that changed the axis of rotation, and locally, when it first hit, it created this gigantic spiral motion that twisted the local landmass around. So you have the Great African Rift twisting around in a great spiral. If your listeners will go to a map or a globe where they can see Lake Victoria and the African Rift, they can actually see that giant spiral in the earth. And I concluded that it had to have happened just a few thousand years ago. And after looking at all the factors involved, I pretty well pinpointed it down to the end of the last ice age. I believe this happened about 11,000-12,000 years ago. And in fact, I explain why I think the ice age ended. There was a 1,000-year period of warming, and then there was a mini ice age, which the geophysicists can't explain. And I think the reason there was that mini ice age was that what happened when this object struck, it hit at a tangent at such a force that it actually ejected material into orbit. And this material orbited the Earth for 1,000 years in a low orbit, and then the orbit decayed and it rained back upon the Earth and created another nuclear winter mini ice age. And then when that cleared out, you had the present conditions we have today. So I discovered this through all my experiences in Florida, the synchronicities I had there. I went back and I analyzed all this, and I came up to this conclusion. So I present this all in the handprint of Atlas and describe it in detail, and I don't have time today to talk about it as much as I would like to, but if any of your listeners, you know, have any questions, are we going to get call-in listeners today?
No, not today.
Okay.
We will have you back on.
Okay.
Here in the next probably few weeks to a few months, we will be doing live shows at that point.
Okay.
And we will have listeners to call in, and we'll be certainly talking about not only the handprint of Atlas, but Wonder of the Worlds as well.
Right.
But, you know, that was the thing that I found was most fascinating when I was reading the handprint of Atlas, was the artificial axis shift.
Yeah.
Because when you look at your theory, when you go through all of this and you really start putting all the pieces together, it just makes total sense with what we know, and we don't know a whole lot, but what we do know of history and, you know, geology and geography and all of that, we know that there has been, and they know that something hit the earth. They do know that.
Yes.
Which, you know, created the ice age, and that's what wiped out, you know, life.
Yes.
And I believe, and I always have believed, that it was something that was intentional.
Yes.
And in your book, you talk about how that is intentional.
Yes.
And I think that's what's most fascinating, because you also bring in a lot of the other components on different pieces of information that I myself have learned along the way.
Yeah.
You know, just by reading and doing, you know, being interested in different things.
Yeah.
And obviously I haven't spent here as much time as you have on it.
Well, it is fascinating, and there's a wealth of information out there to tap into. And you know, one aspect of it, get back to the Great Pyramid just for a second. This strike of the created Lake Victoria is due south of the Great Pyramid. This is one of the things that shows that it was an artificial strike, because as many people have noted, the Great Pyramid is positioned on a unique longitude. It crosses more solid landmass than any other landmass in the world. So this is an ideal position in which to effect a mechanical translational compression stress to force the Earth into another direction of rotation. So there's a lot of little telltale evidence in the geology, the geophysics, in the mythology. There's just a wealth of information out there, you know, and other people could look into this too and perhaps make some amazing discoveries themselves.
Yes, because like you said, there's just not enough time to get into all the real minute details, and you have detailed it out very, very well. In the handprint of Atlas, you really have. So we're going to urge everyone to definitely get a copy of that. Now, you also wanted to get back talking about Wonder of the Worlds again.
Yeah, Wonder of the Worlds, I'm very excited about it. Because Tesla wasn't recognized, I really wrote this book to get people to take notice of what he did and give him some recognition. And there have been some biographies out. But, you know, sometimes when you just tell the dry facts of a thing, it doesn't inspire people. It doesn't get to the heart of the matter. And so I really felt that, especially his relationship with Mark Twain, it just begged to be done as a novel, as a fictional story. And so I created this fictional story, which is nested into the historical facts. So what I've really written is a historical novel, but I just added in the least bit, what if. And the more I study on Tesla, the more I wonder how little fiction is in my novel, because so much of it is true. And another interesting thing I might say is that as I was writing this novel, I would create fictional characters, which I intended later to find a historical person to play this part, if you can see what I mean.
Right.
And so I would create this fictional character, and then I would go and do the historical research, and I would find these historical people who fit my fictional characters perfectly. And one example of this that I tell in some of my conferences is the character Lily West. She's one of the main characters in Wonder of the Worlds. She's trying to find out what Tesla's doing. When I originally wrote this character, she was going to be a newspaper reporter in Chicago. And I came up with the name Lily West because I wanted her to sound like someone who lived back then. And, you know, Lily was popular back then. There was Lily Langtry and Lillian Russell. And the name West, I wanted to connotate the Old West and the adventure of the Old West. I wanted a character kind of like Annie Oakley, someone who was a sharpshooter and, you know, could really take care of themselves very well. And so I had this name Lily West, and then I decided, well, that sounds a little too obvious. I'll change that name and get another name and go on from there. So then as I began researching the actual people in Chicago, I was looking for a woman newspaper reporter, and I knew I might have a little difficulty there, but I did find one woman newspaper reporter in 1893, and her name was Amy Leslie, and I began researching her, and she was very obscure. She was a drama critic, and she wrote two books. I could find very little information on her. And then finally I got her full biography, and I found out that Amy Leslie was just her pen name, and her real name was Lily West.
Oh my goodness.
And
now Lily, coincidence? I don't think so.
Yeah,
somebody was talking to you.
Yeah, the real Lily West was just like my character. She was a sharpshooter and everything, you know.
Well, so, you guys don't go away, because we're gonna be back with more of Sesh, the handprint of Atlas, and Wonder of the World. Don't go away. Oh. You can't judge a psychic on TV because of producer-induced theatrics and clever editing. But now you can analyze famous psychics including Derek Acora, Peter James, Linda McKenzie, and Dana Smoller in the new DVDs ISPR Investigates the Comedy Store and ISPR Investigates Crest Hill Mansion. It's all raw and uncensored footage from 1999, showcasing how psychics really communicate with earthbound entities in the field. The new ISPR DVDs are available at JourneysWithRebecca.com. It makes the perfect gift for the paranormal enthusiast on your list.
Have questions about your love life or your job? Get your private psychic reading from Rebecca. Call to schedule an appointment at 1-888-958-2768. That number again is 1-888-958-2768.
If you're one of the thousands of listeners that tune into internet radio every day, a recent decision by the Copyright Royalty Board is about to change your life. The newly announced royalty rates for internet radio could force this station and thousands of others in the USA to close down. Your help is critical. The only way to preserve your freedom of choice and continue to enjoy music not offered on terrestrial stations is to act now. Visit www.savenetradio.org to learn about this legal ruling and what it means for hundreds of internet radio stations in the USA and the thousands of listeners that tune into them every day. Together, we can reverse this decision. Don't delay. Visit www.savenetradio.org right now and learn what you can do to help. That web address is www.savenetradio.org.
Talk with an intuitive touch. Journeys with Rebecca.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. We're here with Walter Cruttenden. We are talking about many, many different things, most of them about some ancient discoveries that are discoveries of ancient things. I said that wrong. And I know, Walter, you wanted to talk about some stuff going on in South America.
Yes. As more and more development goes on down there, Rebecca, they're finding some amazing things. Just in the last couple of years, they've found a couple of sites that look like some of the oldest observatories in South America, one in Peru and one in Brazil. But another thing that's come up in Brazil that just fascinates me is this soil that they found. They call it Terra Preta do Indio, which is essentially means black soil of the Indians, I think. And what this is the jungle in Brazil has actually fairly poor soil. And except in certain areas, they find this black soil. And when the native population comes across it, they get very, very excited because they know that if they plant crops in this particular black soil, that those crops will grow 2 to 3 times faster, like papayas. So, you know, they'll get fruit that much quicker.
Wow.
And so they get very excited, and it's also sold as fertilizer. So some scientists from Cornell University went there and studied this, and they find that it tends to be found in roughly 20 to 40 hectare size plots. And it has a lot of ceramics in it, broken pottery, this sort of thing. And some of that pottery has been dated to about 9,000 years ago.
Wow.
And they do this because it you know, still has certain pieces, still have a little bit of biological material in them, and they can date it that way. It turns out that they have now found so many of these plots that if you put them all together, it would be an area about the size of France. This is
wow.
The Amazon jungle. And that they believe they were man-made, but they don't know how to recreate them nowadays. And the remarkable thing about this soil is that it replenishes itself as long as you don't take too much of it away. You can take about half of it away, and then it'll kind of grow back. It's just chock full of living organisms, you know, very, very tiny. And so, again, it's something that has been left to us by an ancient culture. It's indicative that there's a very, very old culture there that understood something about agriculture that we still don't know how to recreate today. And it is all over the place, indicating that it was a very, very large culture.
Wow. Now, I've never heard of that. That's absolutely fascinating that it actually replenishes itself.
Yeah,
it's
amazing. Is essentially the best darn fertilizer in the world, and we still don't know how to recreate it.
Oh, my. So they can't break it down and figure out what it is. Is that what you're saying, or how it...
Right. Well, they can see some of the components of it. They can see, you know, what organisms are there. They can see it has traces of charcoal in it. They often find pottery in it, this sort of thing. But they don't know what keeps it active versus, you know, just normal fertilizers that we make.
Hmm. Well, now that's interesting.
So, yeah, it's just absolutely astounding. So these are the types of things we're going to go over at our next conference, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge. The next one we're going to hold at UCSD, University of California at San Diego. And that'll be this October 5th through 7th. And if anybody's interested in that, they can just go to CPAC Online. That's CPAKOnline.com. And, you know, find out information about that.
Well, and the other thing that I want to let you know, too, and the people out there that are listening, we will be posting that to my website, the CPAKOnline.com, along with the information of where it's going to be held and the dates and all of that. And I know you've got, there's a lot of speakers that are already lined up.
Yes, one of my favorite guys who I've never met is coming this year. His name is Peter Kingsley, and he wrote several books, but the one that really moved me is called In the Dark Places of Wisdom. And Peter is one of these guys who is a very well-educated scholar. Where'd he go? At Cambridge, London, and then he taught here in California, I think at up in Berkeley, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, he's considered one of the foremost Greek scholars in the world, and he sort of had an epiphany a few years ago where he'd been studying the very early Greeks, pre-Plato. And he kept noticing how spiritual the early physicists were. And there's a couple of them in particular that, and I forget the Greek names, but they're the father of logic and physics. And they're getting their knowledge from going into meditation in caves. They say it comes from the gods in dreamlike states and things like this. And he's just saying that, you know, we're taking the part that we consider valuable, the principles of physics and logic and this sort of thing, and we're ignoring everything else they say about nature and poetry and the importance of dreaming and meditation. And he's making the point that we should try to bring back sort of the whole teaching, that there might be something to the parts we don't understand and thereby create a better world.
Well, that's being the whole person concept.
And it's beautiful. So Peter will be there and giving a talk for the first time this year, and we really look forward to his insights into the ancient Greeks. We'll also have Robert Schock there. He's the geologist at Boston University, famed for redating the Sphinx. John Anthony West, the rebel Egyptologist. He's been on your show, Rebecca?
No, actually he hasn't, but now that you've said that, I might see if I can't get him to come on.
We should, because he is just a colorful, witty character, and he's found that Egyptian civilization seems to be at its height near the beginning. and that's when you find the best buildings and that sort of thing. And then things sort of slowly go downhill. For example, the Great Pyramid is one of the oldest pyramids, and then some of the New Kingdom period pyramids thousands of years later are almost shoddy.
Yes.
So he's again pointed out that the very early Egyptians knew something that seemed to have been lost
in and the whole translation of becoming more quote unquote civilized, I'm sure.
Right.
Wow, you're going to have some really great guests there.
Yeah, John Darin's going to be there too. He's this really hilarious physicist out of CERA in California, one of the top laser guys in the world, and he's got a whole hypothesis about how this, what it might be about our solar system moving through space that causes this high and low periods in consciousness. And he thinks it has something to do with, as we get closer to another star, it has an effect on our magnetosphere, our ionosphere, and consciousness itself over long periods of time.
Absolutely excellent. Well, Walter, we're just about out of time. Give your web address. I think we're going to be using binaryinstitute.org.
Well, binaryresearchinstitute.org is the main science site, or people can just go to loststarbook.com. That'll get them.
And of course, for all you guys out there listening, it will be posted to the website. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Walter, thank you.
My pleasure.
Find out more about a show topic or guest. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest on all the aspects of paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now, 1-800-728-2730. Again, that's 1-800-728-2730. Or visit their website, www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits. Hi, this is Rebecca. I'd like to take just a few seconds and thank all of my international listeners out there. From Australia, Japan, Canada, South Africa, Bahrain, England, and Taiwan. You know, I would really love to hear from you guys. Let me know what you think of the shows or the topics. Email me at Rebecca@journeyswithrebecca.com. And thanks for listening.
Be sure to check out Mark Kerr's debut CD, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com. This flawless debut performance earned Mark an induction into the Blues Hall of Fame as Ambassador to the Blues for the state of Louisiana. Also, it earned him a nomination for a Musician of the Year in 2006 by the Academy of Texas Music. Mark Kerr, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com.
Journeys is always looking for informed, entertaining, and passionate guests. Email your guest suggestion to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. Thank you to my wonderful guest today, and thank you for listening. Please take a moment and check out the wonderful sponsors of Journeys, Fate Magazine. Published continuously since 1948, Fate is the longest-running publication of its kind. Find out more at www.fatemag.com. Please visit my website for more information. That's journeyswithrebecca.com. And of course, there you'll find all the latest news, events, and show information. And please feel free to write me. Tell me what you think of the show or my guests. Email me at mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com or leave a message on my comment line, 913-828-5559. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey lead you? Many blessings, and good night.